Hello, literacy leaders and champions. Welcome to Literacy Talks. We are so excited to welcome you to this podcast series from Reading Horizons, dedicated to exploring the ideas, trends, insights, and practical issues that will help us all improve our professional practice in teaching reading. Our series host is Stacy Hurst, professor at Southern Utah University and chief academic officer at Reading Horizons, where reading momentum begins. Joining Stacy are Donnell Pons, a recognized expert in literacy and special education, and Lindsay Kemeny, a Utah-based elementary classroom teacher. Today's topic is professional learning and development and what reading teachers need now. Let's get started.
Okay, welcome to another episode of Literacy Talks. I'm Stacy Hurst, your host, and I'm joined today by Donnell Pons and Lindsay Kemeny, as I am every week, as we are all joining together to talk about all things literacy. And today, I have the privilege of choosing the topic, and we are never at a shortage for possibilities, are we, guys? They're shaking their heads no. So I have been thinking a lot lately about professional learning and professional development, and I'll be honest, some of those thoughts have been spurred by things that are happening in the world of literacy. Specifically, we'll save this topic for another time, but specifically between what we call the ivory tower and teachers on the front lines, right? And how there seems to be some kind of discrepancy between what researchers know and are learning and what access teachers have to that information and how to turn that into practice in a way that makes a difference for their students. So I'll just start with, and I think professional learning is key to that, right? In some way, we need to learn. So I'll just start with a really big question. We've all gone to college to become teachers. And so I'm going to start with this. Is what we learned in college enough for us to be effective teachers? Donnell, you responded really quickly with a head shake.
You saw my head shaking. So I try not to do that big eyes flare and that whole, nope, you don't have to show everybody how you're feeling. But no, and I have puzzled on this. We've had many conversations. If you go to a conference with other teachers, you'll inevitably end up talking about it. Why didn't we learn the things that we really needed to know before we hit the classrooms? And that's a really big question. I spent a lot of time in a really good program for teachers prior to hitting a classroom. And yet when I arrived in the classroom, I did not have what I needed. And you've got to ask why, right? Why did that happen? Then we have this thing called professional development, which you alluded to at the beginning. So we're supposed to be continuing the learning journey, which I totally understand. But a lot of that professional development was also irrelevant. And oftentimes I had teachers that had been in a school for 5 to 10 years who found a way to never have to be to those professional. I don't know how they did it, but they didn't even have to be to some of the professional development sessions that we did. And so I've got a question too. Why didn't I learn what I needed to learn? And then what is the difference between professional development and professional training? And is there a difference?
Oh, all great questions that I think we should discuss during this podcast. And you asked the difference between professional development and professional training, which is great. And I hadn't thought of using the word training. I was going to ask, and hopefully we can discuss today too, the difference between professional learning and professional development and professional training. This topic is really big. Maybe we could narrow it a little bit by keeping the focus on reading instruction. So when we say, did we learn what we need to know? Did we learn enough in college to teach reading? I think we're resoundingly no. Lindsay, we need to hear from you on this.
Yes. Well, even if I had been taught what I needed to know about reading in college, which I wasn't, but let's say I had, it's still not enough. So no, the learning doesn't stop there. And you learn so much from experience and actually being in the classroom and trying things and seeing, you know, how it works firsthand. So, you know, definitely the learning shouldn't stop after college, and there's still going to be so much more to learn. I just think, you know, the firsthand experience is the best way really to learn a lot of things. And when you learn something and then apply it, then you just learn even more.
So that makes me wonder what the difference is between teacher knowledge and teacher practice and how they're connected, Donnell.
So Stacey, this is also good because I'm just thinking a lot as we're talking here. And so for me, similar to Lindsay saying, you know, I continue to learn hands-on is the best, particularly when you're teaching reading, because so many students, they're all different, very similar in some ways, very different in other ways. And you just gain so much experience. And then working with different ages, you're not always going to have the same age student that needs your assistance. And that has its differences as well. So the hands-on is critical. Why aren't there more labs with experiences for teachers in training, in education, you know, programs to get that experience when they're working with students? That why does that seem so very difficult? But I think that should be key. And you should see them everywhere. We should have these reading labs, reading clinics attached to teaching programs where teachers can do the thing, which is teaching reading and have experiences with all kinds of students. I don't know why that isn't just a given that we'd be doing that.
Yeah, that it's not built into any teacher program. And I know I'm at a university that is so supportive of any literacy effort. But as with any institution, there are boundaries and laws, and red tape. But yeah, that should be part and parcel. So let's revisit the terms that we just used: professional learning, professional training, and professional development. What are the difference between those three? Is there a significant difference? And what would it be? Don't know.
Okay, well, I've got a comment about professional development. And this is interesting because it was maybe the first time I've seen someone outside of a teaching sort of experience with such a strong opinion about it. But it was when I went up to the legislature, our local legislature, and it was during a session. And a subject of professional development came up. It was part of a bill, and it was part of a bill that was talking about increasing a teacher's knowledge and understanding of how to teach reading. And one of the legislators said, well, we know that professional development is useless. And I was taken aback. I was surprised to hear that he so definitively said, well, we know that professional development is useless. And that's when I first started to feel that maybe a lot of people thought of all professional development as a set of so many hours that were tacked on to a teacher's hours, say a Friday early, let the students out. And it's a whatever, it's a free for all for those 2 hours. And it's not really great training. And that's the first time I kind of sensed that more people thought that about professional development than I had realized.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Lindsay, what are you thinking as we're talking about
this? Well, I was thinking, I don't really know that the right answer, I guess. I have used the terms interchangeably all the time. If I were just going to give my opinion and really think about it, I would think that professional learning was maybe taking professional development a step further and really kind of internalizing it, going deeper and maybe applying what you're learning. But I don't know. Those are just my thoughts.
Yeah. And I think we're just having a conversation because I'm actually not an expert on professional learning, development, or training. I try hard to be better at what I'm doing, but I would think maybe professional development, when I hear that term, I don't have a very positive response to it. Donnell, kind of like what you were talking about with that legislator, because I literally think it's something that my administration has told me that I need to attend. We have so many days that we have to be, you know, engaged in professional development, and they're going to give me development on how to give an assessment or something that I may or may not be interested in. That's what I think of. That's not always what it is. We know that. But that's kind of after years of teaching, I feel like that might be the attitude that a lot of us take on. Training, in my opinion, is a little bit longer, and it's more systematic, and maybe sequential is another word we can use there too, right? If you're being trained in something, then to me that indicates that we're having, you know, ongoing learning about a specific thing, and we're going to continue to add to our knowledge. So it's over time. And then learning, I think, like you were saying, Lindsay, I would put it this way: that would be the outcome. It's what I, as a teacher, have learned from engaging in those opportunities or experiences. So also, Donnell, you were talking about why don't we have literacy labs or clinics associated with teacher preparation programs? But what about teachers who are done with that? What about in-service teachers? How do we best support their learning?
So that's all I've ever been, right? When I finally was able to get my hands on what I really needed, I was already teaching. So it was up to me to find a way to weave that into what I was doing. So talking about professional training, I enrolled in the professional training. I don't know that I ever had an administrator provide an opportunity for professional training. I'm just thinking back in my mind as I'm speaking, but I think it was always me. I always asked. There's a training for such and such, and then I would sign up for it and I would go. And I had to find a student. So I was the one who also had to find a teaching situation with a student and then continue that relationship with that student if there was a practicum involved. So usually there's a base of information that comes with the training, and then you have some sort of practicum where you do the thing and you work with a student and you are watched or observed. And then there's a certification that comes at the end of it. That's what I think of as training. What's interesting to me as I was thinking about this very thing about the training piece, and there seems to be that there's, for teaching reading in particular, there seems to be curriculum materials. And oftentimes those curriculum materials, and we need them, right? Because often I don't have the time to cobble all that together. Some teachers are, you know, have had years and they put it together, but whether or not all of that is sequential and explicit and systematic, as we know, is good instruction for reading, I don't know. So there's usually some curriculum materials, and then there's decodable text that goes with it. You have all these pieces, and you get some training that goes with that, with those curriculum materials if you're teaching generally. But then there's also oftentimes a program that goes a little deeper. If you have students who are struggling and they need more intensive instruction, and that seems to be the one where you have a whole practicum that goes with it. And so they're looking more intently at what you're doing with those materials.
Yeah, pedagogy separated from curriculum.
I had the opportunity to do a practicum, and I had Orton-Gillingham training, and then I did a practicum. And wow, that was a really valuable experience for me. It was a little nerve-wracking, you know, taking these videos of myself teaching, and it was just one student, and then turning them in. But wow, was I excited to read the feedback, because they would go so in depth, and it really helped refine my teaching and just, you know, getting all that good feedback and just, I guess, coaching and then being able to apply it was amazing. So I'm just thinking, wow, how can we replicate that a little bit more? You know, I know different districts have coaches and different problems, you know, ideas or solutions to this problem. But I think we're observed right now, but I feel like it's more just kind of checking boxes. And I just love the idea of getting some really valuable feedback to improve our practice.
So as I've been thinking about this topic, I created like a list of ways that I learn best as a person, but then also to apply that to my craft, which is teaching. And these are some of the words that I came up with. So as I read the list, Lindsay, to your point, how can we replicate some of these things in a systematic way? I would like your feedback on some of these verbs. And which of these do you feel like most resonates with you? Is there a way, or do we need to be using all of these kind of approaches? So studying is the first one that I thought of, because that's me. I like to read and learn from what I read. Doing, just like you were saying, Lindsay, actually doing the thing. Reflecting, collaborating, and analyzing students and their work based on what you've learned, and observing teachers. Did I miss anything, or what are you thinking about all of those things? Sorry, there's one more, communicating.
Yeah, I love those. I love thinking about that. And I don't know how to choose my favorite, because a lot of those, there were several that kind of got me excited. And of course, doing, I want to do the things, but it's really important, the reflecting, which I don't take enough time all the time just to go, okay, how did today go? Or how did that lesson go? And that's what I really loved about the practicum, because it kind of forced me to go back and reflect. When I had to read her feedback, then I had to go back and think about that lesson and what happened. Analyzing, I like that, because I think of data and I love it. I'm such a nerd because I love analyzing my students' data and then trying to figure out what's going well or what I need to change.
A lot of good things. Like a true learner, you got really excited about a couple of those. I love that you said that. For me, reflecting is a really powerful one for me personally. In my first pre-service educational setting, that was a big MO for one of my professors. We always had to film ourselves and then reflect. We were the ones doing the reflecting. He wasn't even doing that. I learned so much through that process that now I have my students do that. And I'll just give you an anecdotal. For instance, what just happened this week is I've been grading. I have one section of a class that I teach that we do the thing. We're tutoring. We're now applying the things we've learned about foundational reading. And I have them fill out a tutor log every week where they tell me, you know, I ask kind of general questions about their experience. And I say, how did this section of your lesson go? How did the student respond? That's kind of how it goes. Well, now that we're in the second half of the semester, weekly their assignment is to film just part of that and then watch the video, reflect on it, and then communicate that to me. So I was grading the tutor logs, same student, and she said, I asked her how her high frequency word instruction went for the week. And that happened to correspond with the recording that I was asking her to do, that section of the lesson she was recording too. And she said, actually, I thought it went really well. Then I watched my recording and I found like 5 things that I could improve on. I haven't watched her recording yet. So I personally don't know what she could have noticed. I haven't seen the communication. But that is a good habit, I think, for teachers to get into. But we really don't. I don't record myself when I'm teaching my students. I probably should. And then, like you were mentioning, Lindsay, getting other people to observe and give feedback is very powerful too. Donnell, you've been thinking about some things.
Just puzzling over. So I've attended more than a few of these trainings and some that had provided a practicum as well. It's been years of having trainings. And one thing I've noticed that really concerns me sometimes coming out of a training is that a lot of time and attention is placed on the things that we're doing. You're doing the things and learning about the things in this certain order. But yet when you ask a teacher, so if this doesn't work with a student, what are you going to do? And they're baffled because they don't really know why they're doing that particular thing with the lesson at that particular time, which I thought was really interesting. We spent so much time on the things that they didn't really have a great understanding of the overview of why they were doing what they were doing when they were doing it. So if it wasn't working, then what do I do? And that to me was really interesting. And so I think that oftentimes, this is huge. Louisa Moats, I just read a quote by her when she was saying that this is a lifelong process. And she's not joking about getting all of this information. And so I don't want teachers to feel overwhelmed, but I thought it was interesting that there wasn't any time taken for us to stop to say, so why am I doing this particular thing right now? What is it that it's teaching my student? What should I be seeing? And then if it isn't working, what does that tell me? And we didn't spend a lot of time doing that sort of thing. So we went through all of the things and there was a great deal of stuff to do, but we didn't really talk about why we were doing what we were doing, understanding it.
Get all the resources discussed during Literacy Talks podcast episodes and stay up to date about webinars and other special events from Reading Horizons. Go to readinghorizons.com/literacytalks and subscribe to our podcast digest so you're always in the know about everything literacy.
One of my favorite quotes that I've taken from Louisa Moats is, and I'm going to read directly from it, informed teachers are our best insurance against reading failure. While programs are very helpful tools, programs don't teach, teachers do. And it's exactly in those moments that a student goes off script that teacher knowledge comes into play. So as you were talking, I was thinking as well, we have the what, the why, and the how with anything that we're learning for literacy instruction. What is it? Why is it important? Then how to do it. And so how much of that as a teacher, Lindsay, as a classroom teacher, is there one of those that's most important or that you need more of?
Well, personally, I like when there's more of the how, because I've had a lot of the other. You know, I know a lot of the why, I know a lot of the what, but I love getting application ideas and different ways to apply things. So for me, that's what I like the most.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense. And I obviously, as a first grade teacher, that was important to me. I am also somebody who needs to know the context of it. So I would say as a first grade teacher, I would probably need to know the why and the how, but more of the how, right? Then as a literacy coach, my focus became more on the why and kind of on the what, but more on the why, what and the why. And then I had to relay that so my teachers knew how to apply it.
But you really, I mean, you do, teachers need that base in the why and the what, right? You need that base so that, like you said, you know when to go off script, or if something's not working, you know, then you know what to do. I just found out a couple of weeks ago that I'm being moved to first grade next year. So I'm doing second grade right now. I've taught kindergarten previously, and this will be my first time teaching first grade. So I know the why of reading. I know the what of reading. But now what do I want to do is I want to dive more into how first grade teachers are applying some of these things in their classroom. And I have my own ideas, but I am going out on my own and finding, you know, some favorite first grade teachers in my district. So I went and visited one last Friday, and I'm going to do another one next week. And I'm just asking them things like how they run their classroom and how do they do their take home, you know, homework reading program, and just kind of gathering and collecting different ideas. And then I'm going to decide how I'm going to run mine. But that's what I'm searching, is more of the how.
Which, as you're talking, it makes me think, as teachers, we approach our students in with a differentiation mindset. Our students are not the same, and we're going to differentiate our instruction based on what they need. Do you feel like there's a lot of differentiation in professional learning development? Don't know.
So I was going to say, I don't know of any place I could go to get the kind of training that I need when I have a student who's 60 years old, never learned to read, and arrives on my doorstep. You know, I haven't really had a specific training for that student. Likewise, I have a student who's 25. English is a third language. They've been in the United States for 10 years. That's a very unique student in a lot of cases. So again, interesting hearing Lindsay say, I'm going to find out more about the how. And I think I spend a lot of time in the how too, because working with adults, their backgrounds are so varied and they've had very different experiences in their learning journey. And so I am always learning about the how. I thought that was interesting to hear Lindsay talk about that.
Yeah, I think the how is the thing we need first. And then we build. I'm going back to what Lindsay said too. And I mean, it's my whole focus as a professor is to provide my students with that foundational knowledge. I do think there's a foundation with the what and the why, and also the how. And I'm lucky to be at a university where the, you know, knowledge and application are equally important. But then as we learn the how and we apply it, I think we need to be continually learning more about the why and the what. Don't know.
I think I've got a great experience that kind of sums up when you don't understand the importance of all these pieces. I was sitting in a training and it was a well-known program. The person who has put the program together specifically says, I wrote this program for students who have dyslexia and are in private school settings. You couldn't be more specific about what you were doing. Mm-hmm. And in the training, the individual providing the training is giving us the background information the first day of. One of the educators raises her hand and says, so is this a program that's good for students who have dyslexia? And the person providing the training says, oh, we don't talk about dyslexia.
Oh,
I was floored. The teacher who asked the question was floored. Everybody looks around the room at each other. Our eyes are kind of big because it was a disconnect, a complete disconnect. And so I really appreciated you talking about all the pieces, the why, the how, the what, you know, that was a disconnect as to what we were doing.
Yeah, it's really important. So Lindsay and Donnell, what if somebody gave you the gift of the perfect professional learning opportunities for you individually, what would that look like? How do you prefer to have that ongoing learning happening professionally?
Well, I want to be able to choose what I'm learning about. So I think that's always more valuable if I can choose the topic than if I just have, because you were asking about differentiating before too. And that's a little bit, you know, I don't want to sit through something where I'm like, okay, I already know all this. I need something a little different. Although I will say, and I've said this before, that every time I go to some kind of professional development and I think I already know it all, I learned something new, you know, so I there's always more to learn about a certain topic, but it is nice to get to choose, or I want to dive deeper into this right now, or right now, my goal is improving my vocabulary instruction. So I want to dive into more vocabulary or morphology or something. So I like being able to choose.
I love that. So autonomy. And I think any educator, no matter the role, that's a huge word. I think that's important. Whatever professional learning opportunities you're giving your teachers, one way to differentiate is to allow them some autonomy within that, right?
I really think having quality to choose from. And so that means that, above you, higher than where you are in your teaching, there's someone making a decision about what that's going to look like, that training. And I really love seeing when they've gone to thought leaders and they've compiled things together that are real good quality. And you can tell when they put a lot of thought into it and they've allowed the thought leaders, researchers to guide what it is that they're selecting and having available. And then to have choice, like Lindsay said, within that. Also to recognize what I have done and the experiences that I do have as an educator, the information that I already do have, and to be able to add to that. That's where the choice comes in as to what I need with that. But I do think having quality teaching and learning moments is really important for educators.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm thinking of so many things as you were talking, because sometimes those thought leaders don't have the practical background. There's a difference between being maybe a researcher and a practitioner, right? So whose responsibility is that to translate between the two? Is it on the individual teacher? Is it on the support? You know, we have roles, we have coaches in our schools. So that's important too, because whatever they're telling us we need to know, and we can trust. I mean, we have people that we look to that know way more than we do. And then translating that into practice, I think, is key.
Yeah, it's really hard. And I feel like there's so much value on both sides. You know, I think it's so important as teachers that we, you know, listen to the researchers and respect what they say, but then it goes the other way too. And sometimes I think teachers aren't like valued as much for, you know, as professionals sometimes, but we really need to consider, I think, the teacher's side as well. And it is, this is research to practice. We need to create more of a bridge. And I think it's really difficult at times.
Unless we are having conversations where we are focused on translating that science to practice, we can end up on one end of that spectrum with the ivory tower syndrome, where researchers are still talking and writing for other researchers, and it may or may not make it to the classroom. On the other hand, when we're talking about the difference between curriculum and pedagogy, teachers creating their own instructional materials without oversight. And I know that as teachers, we're highly connected. We share with each other. There are websites where you can purchase things that teachers have created. And for some things, that's fantastic. But again, there's no oversight. So it could be that they're creating content that isn't relevant or effective when we're talking about teaching reading. I don't know.
I loved everything that you've said here. This is a big topic. I mean, it sounds easy enough when you say, oh, professional development, professional training, professional learning. Those sound like easy things to talk about, but they're really not. One of the things that I am sort of enthusiastic about, I feel positive about, is that when this started for me many, many years ago, and I'm not going to tell you how many now, but when this journey began for me in reading and really wanting to have good quality information and instruction, not just because I was an educator and it was important for my students, but because personally I had people in my household who were struggling and I needed to find a way to help them because no one else up to that point had been able to, that going into a school and just asking really good questions about, so where do I start? That was, no one had any idea. There was no information. And it was a void. And if you talked about, well, I've heard this reading researcher, that was brand new, never even talked about that. And today that is not the case. I'm happy to say that I can walk into a lot of different schools and I'm hearing the same names of researchers and the same names of programs and an understanding. And I'm loving that. I love that traction that I'm seeing.
I love that too. And I think it would be really valuable if we lean in as learners, right? And this is where I think it's so hard as a teacher who is responsible for how many students. And you know what? I don't think the number matters. Lindsay, how many students do you have in your classroom this year?
Oh, it's so great. I have 21.
Oh, that is heavenly.
I know.
Yes, that is true. I have literally hundreds of students now. Donnell, how many do you have?
Goodness, most of my classes are 15 to 20, and I teach three, four. Yeah.
But you know what? I would say, Donnell, your students have a greater sense of urgency, I imagine. I mean, they're older learners who really need to know how to read. So it doesn't matter the number, right? But we've got these students in our hearts and our minds that we're so focused on. And then you've got the systemic things that we have faculty meetings, and we have professional development that we may or may not want to participate in. And we have parent meetings and all of these things. So I think that culture just sucks the fun out of learning for a lot of teachers, just because there's so many other urgent needs that we need to care for day to day. So I have a solution that is totally unfounded and unfunded. But I'm wondering, I'm just positing this. What if we continue with the traditional school year as we do, right? And a lot of that can look the same. And we know teachers have, air quotes, summers off, which is when some of this professional learning takes place, by the way. But what if we paid teachers year round and we provided them in the summer with actual learning opportunities? There are other countries that require their teachers the first 3 years of what we would call provisional to actually get a higher ed degree that is very year round and systematic, and they're learning and they're adding to their knowledge and their practice. And I think that there's a lot we could do. One thing that I wanted to end with, so this has been very conceptual, right? We've been talking about it on a concept level, but what are some practical, maybe resources or ways that you guys have learned about reading that's made a big difference for your practice? And what would you recommend to others? Lindsay?
It's hard to choose a favorite. I think initially I learned the most from just reading books and researching things myself. Then I was able to get some trainings that I really loved. Of course, I love letters training. That is hard though, because right now you can't individually go out and get that yourself. So it's basically now large school districts purchasing. I really love the Top 10 Tools training by Dr. Deb Glazer. And that was very affordable. I think now it's been acquired by someone else and the price has gone up, but that was a great training as well.
Can I just interject there? Because I've gone through both trainings. Both are fantastic. And I have heard a lot of teachers express disappointment lately that they can't pay for letters themselves. They've actually saved money. I mean, and it took time, and then they learned they couldn't, and their districts aren't supporting that. So I really want to say that is a fantastic training. If your district is purchasing that, that's so great. But as teachers, we are learners. There are so many other resources out there. So please do not feel like that's the only thing. It's science. One company or one training doesn't have a monopoly on the science, right? And I think anybody who delivers that training would tell you the same. We can learn on our own. So I love Top 10 Tools. I'll vouch for that too. And I don't know about you, Lindsay, but when I went through it, I really felt like there was such an expert focus on application. Mm-hmm. And so I think that gave me a little bit more actionable information. Donnell, what would you say?
You know, I'm going to have to say overcoming dyslexia. So I kind of took the route Lindsay did, and there wasn't a whole lot available to me. And so I just started where I had something to start with, and that was a book. I could go get a book. And it was Overcoming Dyslexia by Dr. Sally Shaywitz. And I think I've talked before about not even making it out from the library to my car when I just started reading and diving in, because it was answering so many questions. I'd had so many questions for so long. And there it was, finally, someone in a book. And then it was another book. And then it was a training and another book. And so it was kind of this, you know, one thing leading to another and building on itself for me. But I do appreciate, as I've said before, all the trainings that are available, the talk that I see happening, educators meeting in groups, being able to get online. And also, I know that there's kind of an uncomfortable moment right now where we're wondering about, you know, is it terms being co-opted? Are we getting getting enough really good quality ideas being shared. And I think we can work our way through that. I think we'll be okay, but we need to keep moving forward, keep pushing forward because we're headed in a good direction.
Agreed. So for those teachers who are starting, if they've heard the term science of reading, they know it's been legislated in their state or mandated in their district or whatever, some good resources that they can start with if they don't have training available. And even if they do, I recommend, and I use this in my pre-service classrooms, the teaching reading source book. That is a really good foundation because that also, now that I'm thinking about it, it's actually organized like that. What, why, and how? So it gives you lots of practical application. That's a really great place to start. Any other recommendations?
Yeah, well, this is, you know, very basic, but I created some free professional development trainings on the science of reading for my master's program a year ago. And I would probably, you know, I've learned more in the last year, you know, so I haven't updated it, but it is a good beginning for anyone just, you know, starting this journey. So we can put that link in the show notes or something. And then YouTube, if you look up Patton, P-A-T-T-A-N, they are a Pennsylvania network that puts out excellent trainings. In fact, I watched a webinar, you know, just that last fall by Dr. Matt Burns that just completely changed some things I was doing in my classroom. I added in this class-wide intervention. It made a huge impact. Now I'm going to speak about that at Patton's Summer Literacy Symposium. So they're all free. So that's a great place to start and watch. And then the Reading League has a YouTube channel as well. And then they also do a lot of, you know, live events, things that are only like $10 each. That's another one I'm actually presenting in May for their live event. So there's inexpensive options out there.
Yeah, I think those are great ones. And then I think along with your training, Lindsay, that you created for your master's degree, that will give anybody the terminology they need to do their own research, right? So I need to learn more about Scarborough's reading rope, and then they would know, or the simple view of reading, which you cover those foundational basics there. I also would echo the Reading League is a great resource. And one of my favorite resources of the Reading League, in addition to their videos, is their book lists. So that's also a really great place to go. So lots of things. Another book I'd just like to plug, Christopher Such has written a book called The Art and Science of Teaching Primary Reading. He's British. If you get the opportunity to hear him, you benefit from hearing that lovely British accent. But he does that in his book, and it's a short explanation and then how you apply it. So really great stuff. So I think we can conclude that professional learning is essential. We're never done. And it's worth investing the time on any level because we get to keep our own curiosity alive, and that creates joy for our jobs, but most importantly, makes a difference in the lives of the people that we are teaching how to read. So thank you for joining us for another episode where we talk about really big things in a short amount of time. But feel free to visit our webpage and add any resources that you think have been valuable to you in your career in getting to learn about and apply the science of reading. We are at time. Thank you so much for joining us. And we hope to see you next time on our next episode of Literacy Talks.
Thanks for listening to Literacy Talks, the podcast series for literacy leaders and champions everywhere. Literacy Talks comes to you and your colleagues from Reading Horizons, where reading momentum begins. Visit readinghorizons.com/literacytalks often for resources, ideas, and great literacy learning conversations. Subscribe to our podcast digest, and you'll always be up to date on all things literacy. See you next time.